Hey, everyone. You're listening to Wireframe, a podcast about design, development, and disambiguation in our digital world. On this show, we take a transparent look into the best practices of our industry and explore new ways of approaching experiences sprinkled with a few spicy hot takes. If you want to learn more, visit wireframe.fm on the web for transcripts, show notes, and to listen to any of our other episodes. Or reach out to us on Twitter at WireframeFM. This podcast is brought to you by Design Systems House. And now here's your host, Donnie D'Amato.
Hey, good to see you. Thanks for coming. This is another episode of Wireframe, and today I'm going to be talking about modes. All right, so actually what I'll be talking about today is basically my talk from Clarity. So if you didn't know already, I did a talk at Clarity back in 2023, which was late last year, and the title of the talk was Mise en Mode. And the whole talk was basically about modes and how we might use them for our purposes in branding and expressions and things of that nature. So what I'm going to do in the episode today is I'm basically going to be doing that talk. And if you want to follow along with the slides that I did present back at Clarity, you can go to mode.place on the internet. That website is basically the synopsis of that talk, and it describes what I'm trying to convey when we're using these ideas. And if you full screen that site, it is the slides from that talk, all right? So, like I said, if you want to follow along, go to the site. But if not, you could just kind of listen to it. Also, haven't done this talk since then. That was the last time I did the talk, so it might be a little bit rusty. We're going to do the best we can. All right? So I do have a small introduction, of course, about myself that I'm going to skip over because I'm going to hope that you know who I am. If you don't, you can go to donnie.dimato.design on the internet, and you could read all about all my stuff. But moving right along, basically, the first thing that I'm thinking about is that design systems are for people, right? And that's something that Gina Ann has said many years ago, and something that I also very truly believe in, because no matter all the things that we attempt to do in systems work, it doesn't really mean much unless we get that adoption and that buy-in. So it's important that what we do is going to actually help our peers and then eventually, you know, the users that we're going to be working with. So I'm reminded years ago that I went to Schema with my wife. And Schema is Figma's design system conference that they had a few years ago. They had it in New York, and they actually had it a couple of places around the world. And one of the talks there was by Lauren Lupree. And in this talk, she's talking about trying to gain influence among her teams and her peers and all that stuff around systems work. And really great talk. I highly recommend that you take a look at it. In fact, I'll make sure to put it in the show notes. But the final slide of her talk basically just said, they're just rectangles on the internet, right? And the whole room gets a collective chuckle, myself included, right? It's common for us to like joke about what we do. In fact, there's lots of examples of this on the internet, folks that are saying we can do all of these inverse kinematics on soft bodies, and here we are trying to argue if the rectangle should be gray or dark gray. It kind of feels like we're not contributing to a greater innovation, right? Taking a step back, I think about, you know, these rectangles, right? It's, you know, part of my job, right, in terms of system design, right, or just design thinking in general, right? These rectangles could mean something. And I wanted to explore a little bit about that. So in order to do so, I'm kind of thinking about a new way of considering our interfaces. And in fact, a few days before this talk, Nate Baldwin, formerly of Adobe, currently at Intuit, describing about tokens that he would like, and I quote, to see if we can create a flexible multi-brand theming framework that can simultaneously support product expression and evolutionary brand constraints, along with equally governable sub-themes. Okay, so he's asking for a lot. You feel like he should be like asking for a pony for Christmas, because you'd probably get that as opposed to getting all that stuff. But I really do think that what mise en mode actually provides is exactly what he's asking for. So in order for us to go ahead and go on this journey, you're going to go on this magic school bus. We're going to go deep dive into my brain where it is a wild circus of activity, and we're going to figure out how I came to this idea, this mise en mode concept. All right, so the first thing that we ask ourselves is, do new expressions need new tokens? Okay, so what do I mean by that? Well, imagine that you have a pricing page, and on that pricing page, you have these different tiers for your products, right? So you have maybe the free tier, right? And then you have your standard tier, and then maybe a pro tier, enterprise tier, something of that nature. And each one of those maybe cards or columns on that page begins to introduce more attractiveness in each one, right? Because we want to attract folks to purchase this product or purchase this feature, and we want them to pay as much money as possible to, of course, fund our business, right? So in order to do that, we increase the amount of interest for each one of those columns in some way. And typically, we do that through either color, typography, or other stylistic choices, okay? Now, obviously, if you're looking at the slides right now, you'll see a little bit of an example of that. But you can imagine that if we look at the standard card or the free card, that version, you can imagine it being very plain or very similar to the rest of the page, right? We're talking maybe white background and then black text, maybe a, you know, a blue button that's very standard and flat for the first column. But maybe the second one has a lighter blue for the button. And then maybe that third column has a blue background and then white text on it. Maybe there's even a gradient on it, right? So lots of variations between these columns here. And when people first look at this stuff in the design tokens ecosystem, people will think that each one of those columns may require new tokens. So if you do that, you might have a significant amount of tokens to describe just this small part of the larger experience, right? It's just the pricing page. And in fact, it's only a small section of that pricing page. And all of a sudden, we'll end up with, you know, 12 other tokens just to describe those small parts of that page, right? And I don't know about you folks, but I'm trying to reduce the amount of tokens that I'm managing, not increase it, right? So instead of thinking in about that way, what I'd like you to consider is, instead of, you know, making new tokens for this stuff, think about using the existing tokens that you have to describe the parts of the layout, right? So think back a little bit to like dark mode, right? And we've kind of figured out what dark mode is all about now in the year 2024. Basically, when we have dark mode, we're basically saying that the page is body background, as an example, and that color that's assigned to body background will now be some darker color for dark mode, as opposed to in light mode, it'll be a lighter color. So instead of, again, doing it for the entire page level, imagine it to be done by sections, right? So imagine that the top half of your page is like a light mode, and then the bottom half of the page is like a dark mode, right? Again, all the same tokens between those two. And what that unlocks for you, of course, again, is if it's the same token where you have text color on top, which is black, and then text color on the bottom, which is white, right? That means that these design tokens that match these same names are easily maintained because they're just representing parts of the interface. They're not trying to describe expressions of the interface. And that's really what's key here, right? So I speak about this in a blog post called On Dark Virus. I'll link to that in the show notes. But essentially, that's what I'm suggesting when we look at this pricing page. So we look back at the pricing page, we'll see that there's three columns again, but each one of those columns will have the exact same tokens between them. So what that means is that your text color for the first two might be black, but then that third one, text color actually means white. And it only means that in the scope of that column, okay? So that's the kind of thing that I want you to think about first, is that, you know, we have already set up a semantic system to support things like light and dark mode. We can now scope the idea of light and dark mode and other modes like enterprise mode, for example, if you have like the enterprise product. We could scope that to a smaller section of the page and have the, again, the exact same tokens in that location, just with different values. That's what's key with this first part. Okay? Cool. All right, so that's the first kind of part that I was thinking about in all of this. And that should be a fairly easy thing to understand if you are familiar with the way that we handle semantic tokens and the way that we allow for dark mode in our interfaces today. Right? Again, we're just scoping that down to a smaller part of the experience and then assigning new values in that way. Okay? But I'll say that the next part of what we're going to be talking about is a lot more difficult to grasp, okay? And this question was, how might we make space semantic? All right? Now, we already have this, like, solved color and topography and a couple of other things when it comes to semantic tokens. But we might not know why something is semantic versus something else not being semantic. So if you take the semantic token button background color, that's semantic because I know where that token will be applied anywhere in the interface, meaning that it'll always be applied to button background color. That's where it's going to be put, okay? But if I had a token called space 4, I can't know exactly where that's going to go. I need more context, more information in order to figure out where space 4 is meant to go, right? So that's really where the separation is where we know that button background color and where that's meant to go, where space 4, we have no clue where that's meant to go, unless, again, we look at a particular interface to figure out maybe where space 4 might go, okay? And it's very subjective, right? I have no idea if, you know, space 4 is, you know, 16 pixels or 64 pixels, right? It's very hard for me to gauge where it's meant to go in the experience, okay? So I've done a lot of thinking about space semantically, so much so that I wrote a fairly decent article called Complementary Space that dives into the thinking that I went through. It took about 6 months to get. And in that thinking, I was very much interested in trying to align to existing concepts when it comes to space. Specifically, I was very interested in the work that Nathan Curtis did about space. And he has a very excellent Medium article describing how he thinks about space. So it was important to me to align to what the results were that he was going for in his work, but not necessarily if it was done in the exact same way, which it is not. So, and again, in the slides, you'll have a spot where there's three cards that are basically right out of Nathan Curtis's article, Space and Design Systems. The first card is basically without any markup on it, so you can see exactly what it's meant to look like. The middle card will be using something that Nathan recommends as a spacing system. So you'll have something like space stack small or space inset medium. So all of that stuff will be in that middle card. But then that final card is using the results of complementary space. And in that card, what's occurring is that every part of the card is basically marked just with a token called space. There's no scale on the tokens themselves. They just basically say space in all of those locations. And you might be asking yourself, well, it's not meant to be the same amount of space in all those locations. And the answer is absolutely not. No. The way that we apply the space to those locations is instead using these boundaries, very similar to the idea that we got from that first question, which was trying to, again, create a scope that influences what the values for these tokens might be in this location. Okay. Now, again, in order to really understand that concept, I highly recommend that you look at complementary.space on the internet. There's a lot more detail about my thinking behind space. But ultimately, where I landed with complementary space, finally, is that I realized that the idea between OnDarkVirus, which was that first question, and what I was doing with complementary space is essentially the same thing, right? We are using semantic tokens and putting them in our interfaces and then assigning them new values based on context, based on a subsection of the page or the experience, okay? So that was very enlightening to me. So I kind of wanted to know one more thing as a, like a bonus question here, because I wanted to know, what are the shared principles in both of these approaches, right? How did we get here if both these things are the same? There must be some relation. So thinking about it, I actually went all the way back to wireframes. There it is. But wireframes were really the key for me in here, because if you imagine, you know, Jira as a wireframe, right? You might know Jira, of course, as a project management tool, but if you show it to anybody else that's in our industry, they will just identify it as a project management tool, just again, as the wireframe of this thing, right? And the reason that people know that is because they've seen something like it before, right? Our prior experience is influencing this new experience that we're seeing here in front of us, okay? So because of that, users actually prefer experiences that seem familiar. And that makes sense, right? Because if there's something out there that we haven't seen, it's much harder for us to understand potentially how to use it. So if we've seen it before, we know exactly what to do, or we like to think we do, right? And that's really like the key behind all of the token naming strategy that I think of fundamentally, right? Because what we're really doing when we're trying to identify token naming conventions is we're actually trying to describe wireframes. That's really the key behind the whole thing, okay? And it doesn't matter if the layout shifts due to right-to-left languages or mobile, all that stuff is still going to be maintained through these blueprints, these layout structures, these wireframes, okay? So all that being said, fast forward a little bit to Config 2023 in San Francisco. I was there in the audience where Dylan was presenting the new capabilities of Figma's variables. And in his demo, there was an example where he takes what is essentially what I would call a wireframe or a blueprint or whatever you'd like to call it, and he moves that structure, all those semantic tokens, into a new section. And when he moves into the new section, everything changes on that copy. So it becomes dark mode, it becomes, you know, I think it was like German, I believe, or maybe Japanese. But then he makes another copy and moves into another one, and it moves and it changes in a different way. And just those abilities of being able to change that experience from moving it visually in Figma was very exciting to me, because this was visualizing what I've been kind of dancing around earlier in the year, right? The ability to, again, mark these parts of the interface with tokens and then just supply new values to those based on some context, some information, right, that influences the values that are going against these semantic tokens. So, again, like I said, very exciting. And I'm really thinking if we were to be able to take a scope inside of another, you know, part of the page and just, again, flip those values back and forth. And the term I coined for this was mise en mode. And mise en mode, it means placement in mode, okay? It comes from the French term mise en bouche, which is the idea of putting a smaller piece of art in a larger composition. So an example that I have in the slides is a coat of arms from the United Kingdom back in 1816, and there's basically these nested coats of arms that are inside of this image, and that's basically the same kind of effect that I'm trying to describe here. We have these nested modes that are inside of the larger scope of the page that will change the values to the existing tokens as you go deeper. So the way that I like you to think about it is you look, again, at your wireframe of the experience, okay? And what you want to do is when you're looking at that, you want to slice up that wireframe in such a way that describes different expressions that you might want to portray to your user at any point in time, okay? So when you slice that stuff up and then you give it new values to the existing tokens in those slices, you are what I call expressively enhancing that experience. Now, expressively enhanced is basically giving it a new paint job from a color standpoint, but you could do many more different things beyond color, of course, like topography and space. So you would slice up any particular wireframe, and then in that slicing, you can then provide new values to the existing tokens in the slices that are in there. So as an example from there, we would go all the way back to the first question. And if you had something like text color on top in the light area, and then you had text on dark for the footer area that would be on like a dark background, if for whatever reason all the token values don't come in because on dark is like a new token and we weren't ready for it or whatever, it's entirely possible that the area where on dark is being put might break because the area isn't expecting an on dark token. It's too new. Right? Or in certain scenarios where you are introducing new components that have never been dark before, then they might not have tokens at all and therefore also might look weird or completely inaccessible. So it's super critical to really maintain the token names that you'll have across that entire system. Because again, if you start introducing new tokens, those new tokens then need new values, right? And then components that you might not have initially considered to be on these surfaces will also need new tokens. And then sooner rather than later, you are creating entirely new tokens just for dark mode, right? And that's something that you're trying, again, to avoid. Essentially, you don't want to have a token explosion. I've seen this. Many people have crazy amounts of tokens in their systems that are just very, very difficult to maintain. So much so that I feel like, you know, in certain visualizers that are out there, you kind of need a degree in graph theory to understand all the connections that are happening across this ecosystem, right? It's just very, very overwhelming, some of these things. And I really think that it's possible to pare this down to something a lot more manageable using MiseEnMode. Now, like I said, if we are using the same tokens on the top and the bottom, meaning in that light part and the dark part of the page, again, it's the same token. So in the event that the dark mode doesn't go through to be placed in that dark area of the page, that's actually okay, because all it's going to do is fall back to the page level values for the entire set. So now everything's going to kind of look the same, which is okay, because again, it's losing that expressive enhancement, right? It's still a cohesive experience because we're still using the same text color from the top and the bottom. It's just not giving that expression that the footer would have had if it was inverted. Okay, that's all right. So if you could accept all that, that's great. I'm going to take it one step further, and I'm going to suggest that there's actually no such thing as a critical button. There's only a button that exists in a critical mode. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, I have an example that's in the slides that is the danger modal from Atlassian. And in that modal, you could see that there's some messaging on there that you're about to delete something. But in that messaging, in that modal, there is an icon that's presenting this kind of critical state. The messaging, of course, is presenting some critical state. And of course, these buttons, you know, cancel and delete, are presenting themselves as dangerous. So this entire modal is actually trying to convey the concept of being in a critical state or a critical mode. So you can imagine that instead of, you know, putting a specific danger button inside of a normal modal, what we might do instead is put a primary button in that modal and then say that the entire modal is in a critical state. Now, whether or not you think that the delete button should be the primary action or the cancel button should be is irrelevant to what I'm trying to describe here. But generally speaking, again, if we're trying to convey something as being dangerous, we are trying to provide more expression to this particular part of our experience to convey a new feeling, right? Convey new information. The same thing actually happens at GitHub. You can see at your edit profile page, all the way at the bottom, there's kind of like this danger zone. And if you compare the styles in the danger zone against the stuff that's above that, you'll see that it's basically the same components above on the top and the bottom, but it's just changed slightly to convey this idea of being dangerous. Okay, so the headline is now red, the buttons are a little bit tinted red, and then the border around this section is also red. So again, we're conveying this whole area as being dangerous, but it's the same kinds of components from the top and the bottom when you look at that image. So we can convey lots of different things, of course. We can convey something being dangerous. We could also convey branding as an example. So you can imagine, you know, maybe there's a partnership with McDonald's and this part of the page is all red and yellow like the brand's colors, right? So just that subsection of the page has that branding experience while the rest of the experience might be another brand entirely. But you could go absolutely wild with this, right? You can go ahead and purple gradients. You can make text flourishes. You can round the corners, go absolutely mad with power. Totally something you can do because you want to express all these different things. And I understand that, right? Designers want to express a lot sometimes, especially in marketing pages, right? That's a huge thorn in the side of design systems. We usually look at a marketing page and go, oh, well, that's not systematic. Well, actually, it can be. Right? We can make our marketing pages systematic if we allow this freedom of expression through modes and through these semantic tokens to provide new treatments to these marketing pages, right? Now, something that came up in some of the research that I was doing that I thought was a really interesting question, it comes from Mike Mai, and he asks a question that is on a Twitter. And it's an image, and the image is a blue background with white text, and on that white text it reads, is this light mode or dark mode, right? So traditionally, we think, you know, light mode is a white background or very light background with dark text on it, and then in dark mode you think it's a very dark background with white text on it. And what he's describing here is with this blue, right, the blue, it's hard to say if this blue background is a light or a dark, right? So during the conference, I asked the audience if it was light or dark. And in fact, I actually asked if there's people out there that don't know. And people raised their hands to that too, myself included. I actually don't know, and that's okay. Because I have a much more important question to ask, which is, what is the purpose of this treatment, right? Someone has decided to have this blue background with the white text, right? That's what they wanted to curate. That's okay. You could totally have what people have could potentially suggested it as Jeopardy mode. That's totally cool. But what's more important, of course, is why it needs to be there in the first place, right? And that's the hardest part in systems, I think. Because what we're trying to do in systems is we're trying to create guidelines and to try to describe why we are doing these things, right? Why are the button sizes these sizes? Why are the spacing this particular scale? Why did we decide all of these things? And this is really hard for designers because I think it's really hard just for as a human to introspectively look and understand why you're making these decisions, right? Why did you decide that blue and white as a combination is appropriate in this particular case, okay? And especially as a system maintainer, we actually don't really care. You can ask pretty much any design system practitioner out there, we don't care what the colors are most of the time, right? As long as they're accessible, you know, we're just going to be like, okay, they're accessible, great, kind of do whatever you want, more or less, right? But it's important for us to be able to support the do whatever you want within reason, right? And I think that's what mise en mode, sorry, French folks, I apologize, mise en mode will do. Being able to provide those new values to existing tokens to create any expression that you want is a very powerful thing to be able to do, right? Because imagine, like, when you introduce a new token, right, you need to do all of these different steps. Right, you have to go into your Figma file and define the token. You have to find the value for that token in that particular place. You need to publish a library. You need to let your devs know. There's so many things that you need to do in order to get a token to exist in the ecosystem, right? And the more expressions that need to be done with these additional tokens, it's just very, very hard to maintain. Again, imagine if you just had the standard set of semantic tokens that don't change, right? As long as you've got that set down, then you're not really needing to introduce any new tokens because all you're doing is changing values. And changing the value is a lot less expensive than introducing a new token, okay? And don't get me wrong, Designers aren't typically thinking about it in this way, right? Designers are just looking at the background and going, I want it to be purple. And it's up to us system folks to support those possibilities, right? So, like I said, mise en mode is basically unlocking the ability to be creative in these experiences while maintaining our expected systems. So you can imagine this is super powerful. By the way, at this point in time, I don't remember the rest of the slides. I'm going through them right now. And I know that I had some big oration at the end of this. But the general gist here is that the semantic layer of token naming is paramount. And admittedly, in mise en mode and this presentation, I don't really describe what the token naming should be. I have a couple of articles that dance around it, and I've had people reach out to me about what I believe is the right token naming scheme at this point in time, which has fluctuated over time, absolutely. My blog post, Tokens as Intents, is a little outdated in comparison to what I think now. Not by much, but there's definitely some more places for improvement there. But leaning into the semantic part of the token set and really not worrying so much about any other tier is going to be the thing that helps you support the ability for these expressive enhancements inside of these experiences, right? Again, this goes beyond just our application designs, right? This is actually supporting design systems for marketing pages, okay? It's like something that we've always been trying to figure out, I think, right? Oftentimes we look at the marketing page and go, okay, well, let the graphic designers figure it out and, you know, here are the colors, but, you know, you do it on your own. Maybe they don't. Maybe they are supported by the system too. I think that's possible here. So anyway, wrapping all this up, my last slide, maybe they're just rectangles on the internet, but maybe they're rectangles burdened with glorious purpose. So that was basically the end of the talk. Again, I've jumped around a little bit in there. I forgot what my big stupid speech was at the end, of course, but I can't stress enough how important it is to consider this approach in your ecosystem, when you, especially if you are doing multi-brand or if you have marketing pages that have lots of different backgrounds for different cards that have different expressions, right? If you're doing co-branding, all of that kind of stuff can be things supported by mise en mode. So, like I said, I invite you to go to mode.place on the internet, a article that basically goes down what I just described here will be there for you to read and consider. Something else that's important about this is that I don't actually describe how to present this in any particular tool, okay? Obviously, Figma can support the idea of modes in it, something that was supported when they launched variables at config in 2023. And then certainly in code, we are able to scope variables to a particular location in the page, okay? But again, I don't have anything in the document that describes the execution of how you might do this stuff. And the reason for that is because I really want folks to figure it out in their own ecosystem, right? It could be totally different for what you want to do to be able to support this idea. The idea here is more important than the execution. And landing on this as a light bulb moment for anyone will then get the gears turning for them to start implementing it. In fact, after I did this talk at Clarity, Danny Banks, who is the person behind Style Dictionary, turned to me at the end of Clarity and said, "Hey, I did it." And I said, "What do you mean you did it?" He says, "I did exactly what you were describing." And he turns his laptop to me and I said, "That's amazing. Please send it to me." He hasn't sent it to me, and I'm sure he's busy and totally warranted. But it was very exciting that someone who's very deep in the space of design tokens really latched on to the concept and decided to try to run with it immediately. And for him to be able to kind of whip it around in, you know, only a few hours That's pretty exciting too. So I invite you to give it a shot and see if this is something that you think might be helpful in your design systems and your partnerships in your organization. And if you have any questions, reach out to me on Twitter. You can grab at me directly, Donnie D'Amato, or you can go ahead and tweet WireframeFM on the internet. But other than that, thanks for listening. And the talk is available on the internet as well, along with all the other talks from Clarity. I will link to where that is in the show notes here. But I hope you enjoy. I hope you solve some problems out there, and I'll see you in the next one. Later.
That wraps up the show for today. This has been another episode of Wireframe. If you liked this episode, please share it with your network. If you want to learn more, visit wireframe.fm on the web for transcripts, show notes, and to listen to any of our other episodes, or reach out to us on Twitter at wireframefm. This podcast is brought to you by Design Systems House. Thanks for listening, and until next time, stay clear.